It's a good afternoon to you and welcome to On the Radar. And of course, this week, this On the Radar is in the hands of Franz Nangera, the man himself. And this afternoon is no exception. This is the third edition of this week. And it's of course now just 1 minute after the hour of 1 o'clock. And we still have 1 hour 30 minutes together, 1 hour 29 minutes together. And we are going to discuss issues of economic bread and butter issues. And don't forget, we'll have the gender, Minister of Gender with me. Of course, it's going to be telephonic. We'll have Minister of Gender with me. Then we'll also have Anacleta on the line. Very much alarming statistics from the NSA on Kavango East that we want to hear. The level of poverty in Kavango East has risen sharply and alarmingly. So we will have her on the line to fill us in. So those are the topics, main topics today. And we just want to hear, because men are accusing Ministry of Gender of aiding women to economically abuse them. So that's economic abuse, while the Ministry of Gender is fighting against gender-based violence, but they are at the same time perpetrating, perpetrating economic violation, economic abuse to men, which means this is an accusation, a feeling around men. This is what men feel. That this Ministry of Gender is perpetrating. Right. So without further ado, I'm joined by my colleague, that is Anacleta Ikela. Ikela.
Ikela.
Anacleta Ikela. All right. So she's going to fill us in on the alarming statistics that have been released over the Kavango East region, especially when it comes to the level of poverty. Anacleta, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, please, without further ado, let me just give it to you so you can just pour it out.
Mm-hmm. Now, yesterday, on Tuesday, during the Namibia Statistics Agency, NSA, they revealed an alarming poverty level and a lack of basic services in the Kavango East region. Now, presenting the 2023 census report in Rundu, the senior demographic Tommy Harris said that 13.8% of residents have no access to clean water in Kavango East region, while 50.5% lack toilets and 57.4% have no access to electricity. Harris also highlighted that the Ndiona constituency has no flush toilets at all, and that 31.6% of them, this can increase the risk of.
All right, can you can just repeat that fact, because you were cut somewhere there.
Okay, with the Ndiona constituency?
Start from the Ndiona constituency, yes.
Okay. Harris also highlighted that the Ndiona constituency has no flush toilets at all, and that 31.6% of the Mukwa residents fetch water directly from river. This can increase the risk of waterborne diseases. He also then highlighted that the region population have grown to 218,421, with urban area like Rundu now making up 56.9% of the population. And you know what that means, right? And Speaking at the same event, the governor of Kavango East Region, Julius Hambuka, also welcomed the data, saying that it indeed will help leaders plan better and address pressing issues such as water, sanitation, electricity, and education.
All right. So So when you are, because you are on the ground, those statistics, how real are they in your view? And I mean, according to your own observation, what do you see?
I see that the statistic, this was actually represented in 2023, and now we are in 2025. I can testify and say it's 100% correct, because if anything could have improved, we could have at least street lights or perhaps water, and also at the same time toilets. Just like last week, I reported that some residents in Rundu, especially the ones in Millennium, Sao Yema, and Gama, has not been having water for the past 2 weeks already. But not now, let's not go to the ones that are in informal settlement. The ones that are in informal settlement have no water at all. So for me, the statistic is loud and clear, and it's true at the same time, because people in Rundu, only few have access to clean water. Most of the people fetch water at the river, and also they indeed fall victim to these predators that are also in the water itself. So just like the statistics say that most of residents in the Mukwe constituency uses water from a river, this is ultimately true because they don't even have boreholes, so to say. So most of the residents, they go and fetch water from the river. And this is due to not having tap waters in their houses. And the only borehole that is there is from the Shadi Kongoro Green Scheme, where most of the residents are now forced to walk kilometers to come to Shadi Kongoro just to fetch water. But most of them, since the river is just nearby, they are just forced to go and fetch water there. And also the statistics of the toilets, many people that are living in Sao Yema, Tuhingireni, Tumweneni, Dama, Sun City, these are the most informal settlements. And I can testify that really these people use nearby bushes to go and help themselves. Or perhaps some of them have access to pit latrine, and many cannot afford to kind of like have, because they already don't have water, how do they get access to have a flush toilet? So the percentage to say that 31.6% of people do not have flush toilet is exactly true. And also the fact that the population has grown to 218, I can also say this is true, because many people are immigrating from the rural area to come to urban area in terms of looking for work. You know, everybody nowadays and they want to survive. So in rural areas, there is no job, but the job is within the urban areas.
All right. So, and of course, that's a good overview. But you also, now it's talking about in that area, also we are hearing that there are 4,000 cases of mental health. Just take us through in that.
Meanwhile, in the same region, which is Kavango East region, a number of 4,492 mental health cases were reported this year, only from January to September. And you can imagine that this is something to do with mainly men have recorded the highest, because the disturbing part is most men do not really want to talk or express their emotions when it comes to things that are disturbing them mentally. And when we were attending the event, the Rundu Directorate of Health confirmed and also say that many men in the area are living in stigma, and the society often prevent men from seeking help, leading to depression, anxiety, substance abuse, and even suicide. We have seen a lot of reports coming in and out saying that men have committed suicide because of certain issues. Some say financial issues. It can also be relationship issues and also drug abuse issues. And also when Ms. Agnes Wenge was speaking, she's a senior social worker, she narrated that many families do not have a father figure when it comes to the Kavango East region itself. So mainly the only person available is the mothers. And also when you look at the statistic that we were just talking about here, most house-headed homes are from women. Women in the Kavango East region, women are the ones heading the household. And also when you look at now mental health, if women are the ones now that are heading the household, what will now a woman give to a boy that wants to be a man one day? What advice is she going to give? Because all these, the boy will see in the house is the mother cooking, the mother washing, the mother cleaning. So what is there for him to do apart from what a man is supposed to do? So this is one of the issues that was also raised. And also another advocate, who is Jodel Shikusho, echoed saying men are pressured to hide their emotion, which can have a devastated consequences to most of the men. And also at the same event, the governor of Kavango East Region, Julius Hambuka, said that government is going to support to improve mental health services. And he also emphasized that talking about their challenges is a part of the healing process. And they also considered that maybe perhaps they will now want to see how they can emphasize the World Suicide Prevention Day, because there is a really need of awareness and counseling and support that is needed for most of the boy child or most of the men, because these are the people that are most affected. You find women going for workshops, but then it's rare that you find men maybe going for men workshop. But here and there is a men conference, but even when you go and attend the men conference, you find that just few men will come and attend the specific conference. But Molly, if you have a women conference, you will see thousands of women attending these conferences.
Right. Okay, right. Nakleta, thank you very much for filling us in, and of course wishing you a great day ahead.
You're welcome, Frank.
Right. All right, that was Anacleta from on the ground, from of course reporting on the alarming statistics on the in the Kavango East there released. Those are the 2023 statistics. Now, this has brought us to the NDP 6. And I just want to read a few desired outcome under economic growth, under economic, what is this, pillar one, under pillar one, that is economic growth, transformation, and resilience. Okay? So the government wants to achieve sustainable economic growth and prosperity for all. For all Namibians, the economic growth, transformation, and resilience pillar seeks to achieve high economic growth and transformation. And transform the economy from a high dependence on primary industries to secondary okay, to secondary and tertiary industries. Now, you are wondering what does this have to do with the statistics and what we are talking about? I'm coming there. And to create substantial employment opportunities through value addition, beneficiation of natural resources, and development of new industries. Now, here's what is very important. Desired outcomes. That is now 0.101. By 2030, Namibia will be a resilient middle-income economy, underpinned by inclusive, diversified, and sustainable, you know, growth. Now, we also look at, I just want to give you just so that when we go into this, I have a question. The thematic areas are saying the consolidation of growth, consolidating growth from current sources and boosting new sources of the economy, I mean of economic growth and employment. Then the goals, I'm just going to read but a few so that you understand. Namibia want to achieve a high inclusive, sustainable economic growth with decent wages. Okay, that's very powerful. And the desired outcome is that, by 2030, achieve 7% or more economic growth rate. That is 0.103, say, achieve employment rate of 75% from 63.1%. Okay, I stop here. Okay, the focus areas, let me just give you the focus areas. Focus areas are agriculture, value chain, development, that's one, agro-processing, two, and three, manufacturing, four, green hydrogen. Yes. Now, after reading all this, you know, when you sit and you read the NDP 6 booklet, which is more practical, you know, they outline all the practical steps on how they want to achieve certain, you know, developmental goals. What is alarming now is that where will the government achieve all this? Because the government is talking about how they are going to achieve it and what are the strategies to achieve, you know. They want to achieve this way. Where is government going to achieve this? We are not asking how. The government is already saying how in this book. But where? Because we are receiving alarming reports on poverty. Regions that are in serious poverty. You know? And the government is saying that by 2030, they want to make sure that the livestock and crop value chain are thriving and then collectively contribute at least 8.0% of GDP from, you know, 4.6%. These are good, you know, interventions. But where is the government going to fulfill all this? Because Kavango East, which is the second most populous region, okay? Kavango East and West combined, those are the second most populous region, but they are in gross poverty. In fact, they are the poorest regions in Namibia. And we are still on the basics of water and sanitation, you know, providing water. They say it in political, they say potable water. I don't know whether there is any water that is not potable. But they say potable water and sanitation. Clean drinking water and sanitation. How? I mean, not how, but where is the government going to fulfill this? Because regions are plunging into serious poverty. And we only have 4 years. Because for you to say you want to be, you want Namibia, let me just read this again for you. It's on page 4 of NDP 6. Sorry for the noise. I'm having physical papers here. So please pardon the noise in the background. Let me just find page 4 again. Okay. So the one of the desired outcomes is that 0.101 Namibia will be a resilient middle income economy underpinned by inclusive, diversified and sustainable growth. Okay, where will we achieve this? When is answered. How is answered. But the government is not answering where. Because who will be the people that are part of this middle income, you know, country in 2030? If regions that are most populous northern regions are among the poorest, you know, regions. And in fact, a large chunk of the population doesn't have access to water. There's no electricity yet in many areas. The people are still taught under trees to a certain extent. In some areas, no network. Where is the government going to achieve a middle income country? A middle income, you know, country, resilient, a middle income country, but resilient middle income country underpinned by inclusive diversified growth. How do you diversify growth when 8 regions, 8, talk about Kunene, Ohangwena, Oshikoto, Oshana, Omsati, Kavango, Zambezi, 8 regions that are where you still find people still walking long distances to access water. And we are talking about, you know, livestock and crop, you know, value chain that is supposed to add 8.0% to GDP from 4.6. And we are talking about 75% employment rate by 2030. What are the enablers? These are the questions that we need to ask ourselves. So the enablers are here. The government is talking about green hydrogen and gas, oil and gas and so forth. Those are enablers. That's very fine. But where is the government going to achieve this? Where is the government going to achieve this? Because most regions, 75% of people in Namibia, around 900,000 people going up to 1 million are living in shacks. And in fact, 99% of those shacks don't have electricity. And the government is talking about, you know, achieving a resilient middle income economy by 2030, underpinned by inclusive and diversified growth. From where? Okay, maybe not from where, but with who are the participants of this economy? Because now the Minister of Foreign or Foreign Affairs is talking about men getting their wives' names. We are not, which means we have already taken a U-turn from where to 2030. We are busy talking about other things. Now, who are the participants of this economy? I mean, in this economy? Because a huge chunk of people are unemployed, and the Namibian Statistics Agency is just releasing another bombshell, another Pandora box, if you like, about the Kavango area. Well, when it comes to increasing population, Kavango will give you the thumbs up. You've done very well. But when it comes to service delivery and basics for the local, for the ordinary citizen, we have been lagging, and we are still lagging. Are we able to become a resilient middle income economy by 2030, which means this is roughly 4 years to go. You know, it's in 4 years' time. We are ready to become.
Bargain Hunters, where you save has slashed price on groceries, treats, fresh fruits and veggies. 2 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just $89.99. 10 kilos number one maize meal, $99.99. And pay just $12.99 for each of the following. 18 roads baked beans in tomato sauce, 100 grams champion French bologna, 20 U brand rooibos tea bags. Save big at you save.
So we are talking about becoming a resilient economy by 2030, in 4 years' time, when we are not resilient enough to make sure that sanitation is solved. We are still at the basics. We are still on the basics. We are still on the basics, but yet we want to achieve a diversified economic growth. Excuse me. Maybe but we will find this, we'll come and dissect more, but first of all, we are going, to have the Minister of Gender on the line right now, and then from there, We combine the argument, and we try to see if we can analyze. It's quite very interesting, you know, how the government is agencies are browbeating government. The government is saying this, but then statistics is saying otherwise. Or statistics are saying otherwise. So that's a browbeating. And how are we planning? How are we planning? Who is informing our, what is informing our planning? You know, our dreams. This now brings us to what, you know, Frederico was saying on Monday. We are not planning based on knowledge. All right, without wasting time, we are joined online by the man himself, who is at the helm, you know, the spokesperson, and in the ministry of gender equality. Mr. Lucas Afiku, let me welcome to our program.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for having me.
Right. So there is a feeling, a general feeling that is very much growing that you as a ministry are fighting gender-based violence, which means you are more fighting for women, but then at the same time, using women to economically enslave and abuse the male breadwinners. So what is your take on those, you know, I don't know whether they are allegations or they are, whether they are feelings, but they are becoming very loud.
No, thank you very much for the opportunity for having us in giving us this platform. We're so fully noticing or understanding that this is one of the platforms really that we get to clear things like this, which we can also attribute to campaigns that the nation or the ministry is running. So this is really a great opportunity. With your question, I would like to stress out that the primary basis or the primary formulation of the Ministry of Gender is among so many other things is relating to the topic that we are discussing today is to fight gender-based violence. Now, gender-based violence can be perpetrated or can be committed from a woman to a man or a man to a woman or to a child. But statistics are telling us that the primary perpetrators of gender-based violence are men. If you look at how many gender-based violence, gruesome gender-based violence incidences just took place in this week alone, there is not one woman who's featuring, it's men. But that, even if that is informing us that men are the primary perpetrators of gender-based violence, it does not mean that there are no men out there who are not suffering at the hands of women. They are, and they have come to the ministry. They have, I don't speak for the police, but I know we have incidences of where men have gone as far as reporting to the police. It's unfortunate, and really I'm also hoping that the nation will come to an understanding, because we'll have people who would go out and sit at the hookah shop or wherever, and they say things that could be that somebody will be listening to and can convey that message wrongly. In the past, the men would say that if you go, and it's resurfacing, and I don't know exactly from where, in the past, the men would say, if you report to the police a case of gender-based violence, and the police will laugh. But that now questions you that how then do we have women who find themselves behind bars if the police are not serious about gender-based violence? It is the same case now, same narrative I pointed to the Ministry of Gender. How do we have women who are paying maintenance for their children if the ministry or government is only siding in women? Remember, also rightfully so, in knowing that this ministry is governed by policies, and our president even spoke this week, and she's saying we are Namibian first before we are tribe. So Namibian first, and that's the kind of policy or principle we apply to our work, to say that either it's a man or a woman, gender-based violence is a serious issue in Namibia. Whoever is reporting it, be it a child, because the Child Care Protection Act 3 of 2015 gives also a voice to the child, especially when they are from the child, let's say of 7, 8, where they can participate in their own decision making. They are also given a voice to air their voice to issues pertaining to their well-being. So, yeah, that is really a piece of information that is going out that the law is siding with women.
But you are saying that men are the perpetrators, which means that's of course statistically that is the statistics that are there. But have you, in your ministry, do you have statistics as to who the causer? Because there is no victim and perpetrator without a cause of the issue. Now, have you made research to find out who are the cause? Because in most cases, men are abused psychologically and abused emotionally, abused financially and economically, and then the last resort is violence. And this is now what you take as a ministry, as a statistics, the last, which means the result of an act is what you take as a ministry as to say it's a perpetrator, which means you make a man as 100% source and cause of whatever it is that has resulted into violence.
All right. Let's look at it like this. With that question you just asked now, the same right that a woman has in, first of all, crime or violating anyone's right, there is no enough cause for anyone to take somebody's life, to beat them up, to kill them, and any of these other things, irregardless of what it is that the person did. That's one, which I'm going to amplify more by saying, if a man, just as a woman, may be suffering emotional abuse, financial abuse, just as the woman has the right to go and seek for assistance, either be from the ministry, either be from family, either be from church, the man has the equal right to do the same and seek for assistance. Because what if now women start saying that, okay, what do we now say, or what, where do we classify or put the women who are abusing men? Who are being abused by men? Should they then wait and say that, may I took this man's life because you don't see the primary cause of what this man has put me through? And we know there's many of them. So if that then becomes the case, then people will be taking each other's life. Men will be taking women's lives. Women will be taking men's lives. So what I'm trying to say is that there is no reason enough for anybody to take anyone's life because you feel that this person has neglected me or abused me in any other way. And if such is happening, anyone has the right to report.
Right. Now, let's look at it this way. Okay, fine. There is no reason enough, but there is trigger enough to trigger somebody to go out of his mind and do something that was beyond their intellectual ability under normal circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, those triggers are the ones that we know, both ministerially and also humanistically. Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at this way. This man has been paying, you know, maintenance for 17 years, just to be told that the child is not his. And when this person is trying to approach your office, of course, on paper, there is equal access to the law. But practically in your offices, it seems that you lean more on women because it seems that the agenda is to make, you know, women victim and innocent, and then to paint a perpetrating bad picture on a man who is also suffering economically because some men have been raising children that are not theirs. So in that case, what do you do, or what have you done? Because there are a lot of cases that were brought to you in your ministry from, by men who have been raising children that are not theirs, who have gone out of their way to win bread, because we are talking about bread and butter issue now. They, now, this man has been raising a child that is not his. That's number one. Number two, there are many cases where women receive money, maintenance money, and this money does not reach children. And you know it in your ministry. But because it is women that are doing that, you are not bringing them to book. So how just, how much should a boy child, how much pain should a boy child, you know, go through until justice is saved equally?
All right. Thank you very much for the question, which is, I think, also needs further amplifying, because it's a misconception we have in the nation that the Ministry of Gender is responsible for maintenance. What the Ministry of Gender does when it relates to maintenance, we can only mitigate between, let's say, a father and a mother, if there's a child, for the sake of the child, because children fall under the Ministry of Gender. So what we do is mitigate. What do I mean? If there is a case where maybe parents are splitting or divorcing, and one of the parents now say that I want to claim maintenance from this person, that is not the responsibility of the Ministry of Gender. And I hope the listeners take note of this. That is the responsibility of the Ministry of Justice and the courts. The courts are the one who will do that assessment. And when they do that assessment, they will see there is many things they consider, and they will say, okay, since you make this much or whatever businesses, you can pay. And it's vice versa. We have women who are paying maintenance because the children are with fathers. And we have fathers who are paying maintenance because the children are with their mothers. We have men who are misusing money they are receiving from women because of certain lifestyles. We have women who are misusing the money because of certain lifestyles, and they are receiving it from fathers. So that component is with the Ministry of Justice. The Ministry of Gender, like I said earlier, is responsible for mitigation. When two parents are splitting, they can say, let us go to the Ministry of Gender to help us draw up a parenting plan. And in that parenting plan is where we can, where one of the parties can indicate to say, okay, me, I'm able to afford this much for the maintenance of these people or my children or the woman, whatever he wants to maintain. Then if the two parties then agree, we don't really have the power to say, but you are making this much money, pay this. If we can only, if they do agree, then we draw up a parenting plan for the parents. If they don't agree, then they are referred to the court, because then the court can enforce, and it becomes a almost like a law to say that the court has said, if you contravene it, then you face whatever consequences come with that. If it's prison, if it's fining, then the court has power. But gender, what it does in this instance is just mitigation. That's one. Two, yes, it's unfortunate, and we have seen it where there is people who are raising children that don't belong to them. But also that, then again, if one realizes that I'm raising a child that does not belong to me, it's not the work of gender or responsibility does not fall on the Ministry of Gender to do a DNA for parents. If they can only come to gender and say that, okay, ABC, I'm noticing this is not my child, then gender facilitate by creating a reference, by referring them to a lab, an independent lab of their choice, a government lab, where whoever is disputing these claims pays to have the DNA test done. So when that DNA test is done, if he finds that it's his child, because we have many cases where people say it's not my child, and they found the DNA to say that it is their child, and they never come back to say that, oh, I actually found that it was my child. But when they find out that it's not their child, some walk away, some take people's lives, and yet the claim, like I said earlier, there is no reason enough for a man to take any, or a woman to take anyone's life by either circumstances that surrounded their relationship.
Right, that's correct. That's correct. Practically, it is said almost loudly that the Ministry of Gender is quick to condemn men's, you know, the side of a man as far as the violence is concerned. And when women do things, they are almost buried underground. No headline, nothing. So, for example, we hear more headlines this week because men, but there was the other week there was a man who was poured with oil, you know, somebody, the lady poured oil, hot oil on the man. And that was almost buried. No condemnation, nothing. So does this not dance into the tune, whether they are correct or wrong? Does your silence not add fuel to the fire? It also, in fact, empower the misconception that you, as a ministry, are just for women and not for men.
All right. I think how one should approach this particular scenario is that when you look at where criminal activities have been condemned, it is very easy to, I'll give an example. When they say, Namibia is one of the countries with the highest HIV rate, or it is a nation that has many people that are consuming alcohol, more than Nigeria, for instance, which has billions of people. It's the index. Because our population alone does not fit in one village there in Nigeria. It's the index. Now, if men are the primary perpetrators, obviously when we say we do not condemn, and if you look at the minister or the ministry's stance when we condemn gender-based violence, there is never a mention of men. We are condemning gender-based violence, either it's perpetrated by a man or a woman. But obviously, because men are the primary perpetrators, the reader might think that, oh, they are condemning men again. We are not condemning men. We are condemning gender-based violence. One. Number two, it's important to note that it's not every time that we, the ministry, hears about gender-based violence that we issue a press release or we do it. The ministry is always trendy whenever there's a case of gender-based violence, especially. Remember, this is twofold. When there's gender-based violence, the police is involved. Gender mainly gets involved when they are children. When the children, if a child is killed or a child, maybe the parents have taken each other's lives and there's a child, then gender automatically becomes involved. But even when we don't appear in the media, the gender people are always doing that. Because our campaign for gender-based violence does not end. We have what we call permanent task force, which are in constituencies and regions, and they are always going around educating people, home to home, educating people about the dangers of gender-based violence. So it's not when you say, I didn't see you say this in the media that we didn't say. Because even when you don't see us, we are activities relating to the awareness of gender-based violence. So it is unfortunate that people might think that, because it's not the us versus them, men versus women thing, but it's an issue of condemning gender-based violence.
Right. So now, is the Ministry of Gender able to facilitate the end of economical abuse for especially the one that is done to women? I mean, that's done, it's done on both, because there are men that are called the Ben 10 now, that are also, you know, getting involved with, in relationship with retiring, women just for gain.
Yes.
So, is your mandate stretched to that level, or do you have limitations? And what are those?
Yes. I would say to a certain extent, because our mandate really just looks at the well-being of people. Most so especially, like I'm saying, it will always look like Ministry of Gender is the one fighting gender-based violence, but that is a core mandate of the Namibian police. We, like I said, we become mainly involved when there's children involved, but even with the loss of life, the ministry always say something. But to answer a question blatantly, it's a very, very, very hard thing to control, abuse when it's happening in homes. Because if you look at, some of the stories that we are reading or coming up from within Namibia, you are realizing that some of the perpetrators are the parents themselves. A child gets money from the father and the mother is misusing the money. Child gets money from the father is abusing the money. A child who's entrusted, when a father is turning to rape their own child, you know, that, and the father is supposed to be, or the mother bends the hands of the kid because the kid is not listening. Those two people are even more than government, you say, because they are primary, they're supposed to be, that child must hide behind the mother and the father as the last defense, that even when all else fail, even when no one will defend me, my mother and my father will defend me. But when those two turn on a child or on each other, it becomes difficult to say, how does government, because remember, government is not in people's homes to say who's beating who, who's doing this to that person. That's why in the past, and we continue amplifying it, we ran a campaign called Spot It to Report It, where we're really calling on community involvement, where they should get involved and bring these cases to either the ministry or either to the police or to the Ministry of Gender. So people have been reporting. There's cases where they are not reporting, but you have cases where, like the cases that are coming out, there's really no, this man or this woman was not really a violent person or whatever, and one incident, like you are saying, maybe there are issues that were building up and the person react that one day and take somebody's life. Which now also we as a ministry are always calling for, to say that we had a campaign we ran where we say that men speak up, because men are normally the one we are realizing are not speaking, and when they blow up, it sometimes it's a loss of life. So we are encouraging that men speak up. Even this month dedicated to suicide, people are, even the president is speaking that, men, let us speak, let us have a conversation before we do things. Because remember, in you taking somebody's life, many people suffer. It's the family you are leaving behind, it's the children. So really taking your life or taking somebody's life does ultimately not become a solution. You just create more harm than good.
Right. Lucas Afiku, thank you very much for your time. And let's, thank you very much for time and clarity on various issues, sir. That... let me just wish you a great day ahead.
Thank you very much, sir. Same good day to you, too.
Right.
Right.
All right, that was Lucas Afiku in the Ministry of Gender, answering questions, because you have said that the Ministry of Gender is facilitating, in fact, economic abuse, and it's just not the Ministry of Gender. It seems that the entire government, according to what you are saying, that is facilitating, you know, economic abuse in men, and men are taken to pay maintenance. So now we have understood that it's in fact the other way around. In fact vice versa, which means women are also, you know, paying maintenance. Those who are not with their children. There are some women that are paying maintenance, but maybe on a very low average compared to how many men are paying maintenance for their children. Yeah, but those are the issues that we are going through in Namibia. I'm not sure whether, it seems that NDP6 is really being browbeaten by various very powerful, loud issues. very loud issues, and I'm not sure whether NDP6 is loud enough. I'm not sure whether NDP6 is loud enough, but let's have a conversation. 083-288-401. Do you want to say something? Do you want to, how do we end economic abuse on both women and men? Women that are listening, come through. Because men are accusing you that you, in fact, have found a way to manipulate the police and Ministry of Gender for your own benefit. And in fact, also manipulate, activism for your benefit so that you continue to milk this, male, I don't even know how to call it. Because it's to milk the oxen. Let me put it that way. So you continue to milk the oxen, which do not even have breasts. But they are facilitated, well facilitated, well orchestrated, position where you are as women, to make sure that men are economically abused. Is this deliberate or is it circumstantial? Deliberate or is it circumstantial? How do we call it? All right. So that's what we should at least have a conversation on. And don't forget that, we are also looking at whether or who is going to be participant of a resilient economy. For those who are just joining us, we were looking at the report that came from the Namibia Statistics Agency on Kavango East, the alarming report on the poverty levels, and that 13% of people in Kavango, of the population in Kavango, have no access to sanitation. 56% does not have electricity. 56% or 57% does not have, clean water. So, and in fact, the whole Ndiona constituency, apparently there is no toilet at all, no flushing toilet. And then Mokwe constituency, people entirely fetch water from the river, risking crocodile and waterborne diseases. So, and when we look at that, it's not the Kavango East is not the only one. There are many regions that have similar, similar situations. Now, if almost half of the population is under lack of basics, how are we going to achieve? Let me go to the outcomes, the desired outcomes. Number 101. When Namibia says that by 2030 Namibia will be a resilient middle income economy underpinned by inclusive, diversified and sustainable growth. Let me take it again. So by 2030, this is DO 0101. By 2030, Namibia will be a resilient middle-income economy underpinned by inclusive, diversified, and sustainable growth. That's desired outcome. And we don't even need to go to the thematic areas and so forth. We just want to dwell on this one, the outcome. That by 2030, Namibia will be a resilient middle-income economy underpinned by inclusive, diversified, and sustainable growth. How are we going to achieve that? when we are busy fighting, you know? We are busy killing ourselves, and we are busy killing others. And we are also busy abusing substance and abusing ourselves. And then, as if that is not enough, we are the high ranking in alcohol, high ranking in suicide. As if that is also not enough, we have problems. We have challenges. You know, we can't meet the basics in regions. You know, regions don't have the basics. How are we going to achieve 2030 a resilient middle income economy underpinned by inclusive, diversified, and sustainable growth? How are we going to achieve that? Okay. So who is going to be part of that, of 2030 then? Because it seems that under, NDP6 is under very loud situations. The negative situations are louder than the optimism that should come through the NDP6. I want to tell you that these interventions are well written, well articulated, in this writing. But who is going to achieve this? I mean, who is going to be part of this achievement? When we have the Kavangos, which are the second most populous people in the country, and also not only them, the entire North, which makes up half or more than half the population of the country, and a large percentage of them do not have access to water and sanitation, no electricity. They still walk, you know, they still walk long distances to access the nearest water point. They are still taught under trees. You know, there are still unemployment, unskilled. Who should be optimistic of this NDP6? It is speaking very, very loud. It is speaking very, very loud. And if you look at the thematic areas here, you know, they are talking about consolidating growth from current sources and boosting new sources of economic growth and employment. You know, and they are also talking about, you know, achieving high inclusive and sustainable economic growth with decent wages. See? And in fact, they are even saying that by 2030, they want to achieve 7% or more of economic growth rate. And they also by 2030 want to achieve employment rate of 75% from 63.1%. And now they are saying agriculture value chain development and agro-processing, manufacturing, green hydrogen, those are the, you know, primary sources of what they are the type of development and change we want to see. And they want to be climate smart, and you know, they want to have some climate smart, sustainable and competitive crop and livestock value chains, and increased value addition you know, and locally agro-processed products for exports. For exports. They also want to increase production and export of value added products in the economy. They now want a developed green hydrogen industry, you know, as a new source of sustainable economic growth and employment. How are we going to do this if we are busy vandalizing our rights and vandalizing ourselves? And is there an end to this? When we are coming up and say, look, the Minister of Gender is the one that is an accomplice in making sure that they feel the fire, so that women feel more victim, and then men are painted with a black paint of being perpetrators. But then at the same time, we are saying that by 2030, livestock and crop value chains are thriving, and, you know, and collectively contribute at least 8.0% to GDP from 4.6%. And then we are saying that Namibia by 2030 produces around 80% of its own natural food requirement from 60%. And then we continue by saying that the agro-processing by 2030 contribution to gross domestic product should have increased from 7.5% to 10%. By 2030, the percentage share of manufacturing has increased, or should have increased, from 10.6% to 18%. And then we say that green hydrogen or green baseload electricity developed from 0 gigawatts to 143 gigawatts. All these are good dreams, but who is going to achieve them if regions are still, you know, struggling in basics? They're still struggling in the basics. How are we going to achieve that? Well, it's 9 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock. If you want to be part of the conversation, we still have 20 minutes to go. You know, we still have 20 more minutes before I give the chair to Lois, who is in the north with Onkundana Dingi. Let's be able to deliberate on these issues. If you were to advise government, what would you say? You know, government wants to go with the strategies of strengthening domestic agricultural, you know, input, supply and innovation systems. Those are good things. Improving range length and animal and plant, you know, health management. That is revitalizing the strategic agricultural, you know, value chains. Promoting climate smart water and energy efficient agricultural production systems. And this is now to expand market access and value chain competitiveness. Now, to promote technology and technology driven value addition and agro-processed product, you know, diversification. to promote infrastructure development, or I mean promote infrastructure development, repurpose existing agro-processing infrastructure, you know, leveraging on green financing mechanism, optimizing the use of industrial infrastructure, enhancing industrial financing, creating incentives for manufacturing, and promote the adoption of modern technologies. All these are good dreams. But where? In Kavango, there is no electricity. Vastly. In some other areas, there are no network. There is no network. How do you promote modern technology? Or are we going to install all these things overnight? Are we going to install all these things overnight by 2030? Are we going to make sure that every place has water and sanitation? And how do people want to be resilient enough to take part in technological advancement when they are living in shacks and they cannot afford basic accommodation? So that now comes to our question to say, who informs the government in their deliberations for the future? Those are the questions we ask ourselves. Who informs the government in their deliberation for the future? Because these are good things. These are good deliberation. But it seems that on the ground, there is a loud voice, louder than what the government is preaching or what the government is prophesying. Because the government is prophesying that contract for difference via economic growth. So, contract for difference via economic diplomacy, economic diplomacy framework. Establishing green hydrogen special economic zones and building local manufacturing, you know, capacity. These all are good interventions. But the question is, whose participation will enable this? Because most of these regions that should be the targeted, mostly targeted, are not having enabling capacity. So they don't have enabling capacity. There is no electricity. Can we talk about 2030 without water? Can we talk about 2030 without sanitation? Can we talk about 2030 without accommodation? Can we talk about 2030? Because we cannot be industrialized and become a middle-income country, resilient for that matter, when people are in shacks. What are we going to do? Or maybe oil and gas can do miracle. It is 16 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock. We still have 14 more minutes. We are just busy, you know, discussing that. Can we talk about, you know, even when you're talking about, you know, fourth industrial revolution, there is a report on Namibia AI, you know, readiness, the AI readiness report, which I want you as an individual to go and read for yourself, starting at least from page 20 going up there. Go and read for yourself, and you find out that. Okay, maybe we are doing a lot of things at the same time. We are multitasking. But there are voices that are speaking more louder against our prophecy. Because this is the government prophecy. One of the government books, the government is prophesying that by 2030, Namibia must achieve a resilient economic, a resilient middle income economy. You know? Underpinned by inclusive, diversified, sustainable growth. Very powerful, powerful statement. But Kavango is saying nope, we are still very far from even getting to NDP-6. We are. How do we come with NDP-6? Maybe we still have a lot of things that we did not do under NDP-1. We failed to do them on NDP-1. Then we postponed, we promoted those problems. They came to NDP-2. Again, we failed to do them. Then we pushed them. They came to NDP-3. Then we failed to push. We failed to do them. Then we came to NDP-4. Then we failed to do them again. Then we pushed them to NDP-5, which also became now almost confused, because now you have NDP-5 with Harambe Prosperity Plan 1 and 2, people became more confused. Which one do we take? Is it NDP-5 or is it Harambe Prosperity 1? And then while we were talking about, we're still pondering on Harambe Prosperity 1, Harambe Prosperity 2 arrived. And while we are still talking about Harambe Prosperity 2, we are now talking about NDP-6 booklet. So are we not underestimating the direness of the situation that we find ourselves, and exaggerating our ability to achieve our goals? Are we not underestimating the problems that are faced by the citizenry, and then at the same time overestimate our ability to achieve the goals that we have set for ourselves? So those are the questions, very important, that we need to ask ourselves. Those are very much questions that are, that we need to ask ourselves. That we want to achieve a resilient economy, which is middle income economy, while we cannot, achieve 100% coverage in terms of sanitation, 100% coverage in terms of water provision or provision of water, and 100% coverage of housing, at least everyone having a house. And then when everyone start to have houses or house, maybe the abuse will go down. Now, one of our focus area is on oil and gas, nuclear industry, micro, small, and medium enterprises, MSME, informal sector, upscaling, private sector, development and support tourism, and of course tourism and gaming. Yeah. When you're talking about gaming, to somebody who is in Havana, they don't even know what you're talking about, most of them. But gaming is an industry. But how do we jump to gaming and make it an industry and make it produce money? Okay, since maybe gaming is an enabler, one can have some hope that once regulations are in place, people from rural areas will be able to access them. This kind of, whether it is a sport or however they can call it. So we are talking about basic accommodation that does not exist in many scenarios. And yet we are saying by 2030, oil and gas production must go, you know, oil and gas production must increase so and the gas production rate must also increase by 2030. The nuclear industry's contribution to GDP must have to increase from 3.2 to 4%. You know, we are talking about 2030 percentage of share contribution of, you know, MSME, that is micro, small and middle enterprises. I mean, medium enterprises. So, but we have a problem because the people that are micro business owners do not have opportunity, and the government is promising strengthening legal and policy frameworks that is going to promote sustainable development and gas fields to support a just energy transition. We're talking about energy transition. And then develop infrastructure to promote investment growth and strengthen skill development and research and innovation. All these are good, but people don't have sanitation, don't have access to proper sanitation. People don't have access to drinking water. People don't have access to housing. The people don't have access to electricity, to network to a certain extent. Children are taught under trees. All these are more louder than what the government is, you know, preaching. It's like you are listening to two preachers at the same time. When you are listening to two preachers at the same time, to a certain extent, you'll be confused as to whom do you focus your attention on. Because all of them are talking. Now, NDP speaking. Statistics are also speaking. So statistics are saying otherwise. NDP saying, we are going to achieve this by 2030. But the statistics are saying, you haven't even achieved the basics yet. How are you going to achieve the major when the minors, you're still struggling with the minor? So how do you arrive to step two if you are still on step one? So, statistics are speaking louder, and they are telling the government your document is good. Or they are telling the government your document is nothing but fantasy. Practical realities in Kavango. No water, no flushing toilets. And it's just not Kavango alone. it is it is not just Kavango alone, many regions are going through that. So it is an issue. It is an issue that both government and all its agencies, maybe the statistic agencies supposed to tell, I don't know whether the government, national planning, and Namibia Statistic Agency, whether they are in tune. But, of course, this is bringing us to an end of our show today. And we will meet again tomorrow, same time, same frequency. And I want you to prepare yourself for Onkundana Dingi that is just coming shortly. I'm just going to wait to receive a green light there if my colleague is ready to take the mic. Then I can evacuate the chair. Yeah, but I'm still receiving the green light. We don't know whether the Namibia Statistic Agency and the National Planning Commission are in tune. Right. We are almost there. We're almost getting there. We are almost there.
On the edge. Eagle FM. The eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Chikao shafathana nana nongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotitha mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira Selma, kono rahita tuimwe.